This is Cross Hope, a daily word of hope and inspiration with Randy Snyder, Senior Minister of Crossview Christian Church. Now, with today's message from Cross Hope, here's Randy Snyder.
Roland Murphy was the professor, Old Testament professor at the seminary at Duke University, Durham, North Carolina, until his death in 2002. He was considered an expert in the Old Testament, so much so that one book editor said, Roland Murphy is a scholar's scholar. He's a scholar to scholars. Well, as a C student in college, that impressed me, that this is a guy who's an expert on the book of Ecclesiastes. He wrote a commentary on it. And he would say that the seventh chapter of Ecclesiastes, the chapter that we studied the first half, the last Sunday I was here before leaving for Germany, and this chapter we studied today, the second half, he said the most difficult chapter in a book that's the most difficult book of the Bible to understand. So I took that as a challenge to talk about the most difficult chapter of the most difficult book of the Bible, Ecclesiastes 7. And yet I really believe the Lord's going to speak to somebody today. There's going to be a man here today, a woman here today is going to hear something that really is going to speak to you about stuff going on in your life right now in 2013, and I really mean that. I want us to begin by reading verse 13 and following of chapter 7 of Ecclesiastes. Again, remember, here's an expert who said this is the most difficult chapter of the most difficult book of the Bible. Verse 13 of chapter 7 says this, "Consider what God has done. Who can straighten what he has made crooked? When times are good, be happy. But when times are bad, consider. God has made the one as well as the other. Therefore, a man cannot discover anything about his future. In this meaningless life of mine, I have seen both of these." Solomon says, "I've discovered a righteous man perishing or dying in his righteousness. And I've seen a wicked man living long in his wickedness. There's not a righteous man on earth who does what is right and never sins." Do you know any woman who's looking for a husband? Do not share verse 20 with her. "There is not a righteous man on earth who does what is right and never sins." "Don't pay attention to every word people say, or you may hear your servant cursing you. For you know in your heart that many times you yourself have cursed others." Now I'm going to stop before I read the next verse, because some women may be offended by it. This was a male-dominated culture. The woman is identified as the evil person in an affair, not the man, but the woman as the seductress. And remember, Solomon lived in a male-dominated, a male chauvinist culture. Just accept that that's what the culture was. I'm not saying it was right, but that's what it was. Verse 26 says, "I find more bitter than death the woman who is a snare, whose heart is a trap and whose hands are chains. The man who pleases God will escape her, but the sinner she will ensnare." In a minute, we're going to read that with the reverse gender, and it'll say the same thing. Some of you grew up and were taught how important it was for you to have a good self-image. There's nothing wrong with talking about self-image. Even kindergarten students in school, in public schools in America today, are taught positive things about self-image, what you think about yourself. But I want to share with you today what A.W. Tozer, a theologian of years ago, said. What's more important than your self-image is your God image. What is it that you think about the Lord God Almighty? Because that has a greater impact on you eternally than it does about your self-image. And I think he's absolutely right. That's why we begin with verse 13 that says, "Consider what God has done."
Well, consider for a moment what God has done in your life. Maybe you struggled to think of anything, but God does work in your life through other people and through circumstances. We'll continue this message tomorrow on Cross Hope. Our website is crosshope.org. That's one word, crosshope.org.
That's why we begin with verse 13 that says, "Consider what God has done." Have you thought about what the Lord's done in your life since you've been born? You ever thought about what God has done in your marriage? Have you ever thought about what God may be doing in the life of a son or daughter? And I know what some people in all three services are going to say today. Well, what's he done for me lately? I haven't seen the hand of God at work in my life. My life's been pretty rough. I've had a lot of problems. I've had a lot of setbacks. I've had a lot of failure in my life. But I want to share this with you. I think we're all going to be shocked in eternity when we find out how God did work in our lives in ways that we had no awareness whatsoever. None. Where God worked in a marriage situation, you weren't even aware of it. God worked in the life of a son or daughter, you weren't even aware of it. God may be working today in this service in a way you're not even aware of. You're not onto it yet, but God is speaking to you through his word. I really believe that in a powerful way. Verse 13 also says, who can straighten what God has made crooked? What does that mean? There are things in life that are not changeable. There's some men who think, I'm in control of everything. No, you're not. And there are women that believe, I'm in charge of everything in my life. No, you're not. And we find out the older we get, the less we're in charge of. And we're not in control of everything. And that's why Solomon says, what God has made crooked, you're not going to make straight. There are things that are unchangeable in life. Verse 14 is a word for somebody. When times are good, be happy. When times are bad, consider God has made the one as well as the other. Therefore, a man cannot discover anything about his future. You and I need to realize that God is the creator and we're not. God is the sustainer of life. We're not. God is the redeemer of life. We're not. And we have so little control in life. There is a theologian by the name of Bruce Ware from Louisville, Kentucky, who wrote a book for parents to teach theology to children. It's called Big Truths for Young Hearts. He had a 7-year-old daughter and a 4-year-old daughter. They were at Cannon Beach, Oregon. If you've ever seen pictures of it, great rocks jutting out of the ocean on the beach, it's a beautiful place to visit, Cannon Beach, Oregon. The girls were sitting on the edge of the water, and Bruce Ware said, I wanted to teach my girls an object lesson about how big God is and how little we are. So he said, girls, Dad's going to do an experiment here. I'm going to run into the ocean, and I'm going to cup my hands like this, and I'm going to pick up water out of the ocean and bring it back to you. And I want you to watch carefully how the level of the ocean will drop when I do that. And you know what he did. He went out in the water, and he cupped his hand, and he brought back the water and threw it right at their feet. And he said, did you see the level drop? And one of the daughters says, Dad, are you crazy? There's something wrong with you. You didn't do anything. You didn't do anything to the level of the ocean. And he said, I want you to get the point that the book of Isaiah says that God can hold the ocean in the palms of his hand. What's that? It's a figurative expression. It's an illustration to say that God is so powerful that in the theoretical sense, he's actually bigger than this, but could hold the ocean in the palm of his hands, all the water and all the oceans of the planet Earth. And then in Isaiah 40, he talks about the breadth or the span of God's hand across the universe. I don't know if you know how big the universe is, but just do some research on the web about how big the universe is. And God says, that's the span of my hand. God's big. We're not.
We'll continue this message tomorrow on Cross Hope. Our website is crosshope.org.
Look at verse 15. In this meaningless life of mine, I've seen both of these, a righteous man perishing in his righteousness and a wicked man living long in his wickedness. Well, that's about why do good things happen to bad people? But more important than that, why do bad things happen to good people? That's the question he was asking. That's the observation that Solomon was making, and the answer is this, that's right. We all know people who've lived righteous lives who died young. Annie and I went to school with a young man named Jackie Brummett from Northern Kentucky. He was a good preacher even as a college student. And one Monday we came back to school to hear that he'd been killed in an accident in Northern Kentucky on a country road in Northern Kentucky, and his life was gone. And living for the Lord, studying to go into the ministry, but his life was snuffed out. I don't know why. Maybe in eternity God will explain it, but I don't know why. And we know cases of people who don't give the Lord the time of day and they live long lives and everything's great, money's good, the health is there, seemingly. But they forget. The Bible says it's appointed unto man once to die, and after that, what? The judgment. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ to do what? To give an account of that which we've done in this body. That's very sobering for any man, any woman here today. I want to talk about verses 21 and 22, because somebody came here today. You came to hear this, what I'm going to say about these two verses. Don't pay attention to every word people say, or you may hear your servant cursing you. For you know in your heart that many times you yourself have cursed others. Don't raise your hands, but have you ever said, I can't believe she said that about our family. I can't believe he said that about me or about you. And we get defensive about what other people say about us. And Solomon says, hey, don't pay too close attention to what other people say about you, because you've said worse about them. And you have said worse things about others. I learned a powerful story this week that I can't even mention the town, because since our messages air on XM and Sirius now, I hear from people say, I know the guy you're talking about. I know that woman that you referenced, and I really mean that. I've heard those kind of stories. A minister in Florida was giving a message where he talked about ministering in Indiana. And he named the town in Indiana, and he said there was a minister in that town, even named the church, which I couldn't believe he did, and said this minister was so hyper-judgmental and hyper-critical of every other church in the community that he would always get up and say, we've got the corner on the truth and everybody else is going to hell. And, you know, we're the only ones that are sharing the truth here. And there was a tornado that came through this town in Indiana one particular year, and it destroyed one of the other churches. The very next Sunday, he said, the minister got up and said, I can tell you why that happened, because they're not preaching the truth like I do. And God struck the church. Well, some of you are ahead of me. You know where this is going. The minister from Florida said the next tornado season came through Indiana. That church was leveled by a tornado. And he said the minister was strangely tongue-tied. He had nothing to say. The Lord silenced him. The Lord humbled him, because his judgmental attitude came back to haunt him. And the very thing that he was attacking and someone else, and the punishment that that church deserved, came upon him. So be careful what you say. Be careful how you judge people. Be careful how you pass judgment on people in your own family, because sometimes those words can come back to haunt us.
Well, this message from Ecclesiastes 7 continues tomorrow on Cross Hope. Our website is crosshope.org.
I want to spend time on 26. It's about the subject of adultery. And I want you to notice that Solomon identifies the woman as the villain, not the man, the villain. He says, I find more bitter than death the woman who is a snare, whose heart is a trap, whose hands are chains. The man who pleases God will escape her, but the sinner she will ensnare. I just want to read it again and reverse it. I find more bitter than death the man who is a snare, whose heart is a trap, and whose hands are chains. The woman who pleases God will escape him, but the sinner he will ensnare. What's that a message about? Adultery may be portrayed in Hollywood or in movies and televisions as something cool, but it's a form of bondage. It becomes a form of bondage. And let me give you a powerful illustration of that. Some of you know who Chuck Swindoll is. You listen to him or have listened to him on the radio. Years ago, when the Super Bowl was in New Orleans, he was asked to speak for an Athletes in Action breakfast right before the Super Bowl in New Orleans. So he's on a plane from Southern California, from LAX to New Orleans. He said that two people got on the plane right in front of him, one at a time. It was a couple, and they seemed to meet on the plane, and he just assumed they were a married couple. They were just loving on one another. They were kissing one another, just couldn't keep their hands off one another. But they spoke loud enough that Chuck Swindoll said, I could hear everything they were saying right in front of me. And he said, I soon found out that they were married, but not to each other. Because they sat right in front of me, I got the full scoop. Their carefully arranged plan was to rendezvous on the plane, then spend the week together in New Orleans. Their conversation, mixed with frequent kisses, included all kinds of comments about all the fun they had in front of them and the intimate ecstasy of being together for the few days ahead. along with attending the Super Bowl. They both laughed and joked as they talked about how each other's mate knew nothing about their plan. Neither one of them, he said, mentioned any possibility of consequences, the loss of reputation or the depression that was sure to follow, the possibility of unexpected pregnancy, the embarrassing humiliation when their mates, not if, but when, would find out. Why, of course not. This couple was on fire. Their full focus turned to the delightful time they would have together. They couldn't talk about anything else. Two things. Be careful what you say on an airplane. People can hear you. You know, sometimes you don't realize that people are eavesdropping, not because they want to hear you, but you're talking loud enough that they can hear what you're saying. You have to be careful what you say anywhere, I think, in a lot of places. But secondly, what Chuck Swindoll said, he referenced this passage in Ecclesiastes of what they were facing, the snare, the trap, the bondage that was going to happen in their lives. And he said, wouldn't it be great if you could somehow follow up on that story and find out what happened 3 months later and 6 months later when their families found out? When their people, co-workers at work, found out about it and turned their eyes away from them when they saw them, didn't want to face them. When the word got out and all the repercussions, all the fallout, all the damage that was set in motion because of a fun weekend in New Orleans and beyond. It's a great lesson of Ecclesiastes 7:26. I find more bitter than death the man or woman who is a snare, whose heart is a trap and whose hands are chains. The man or woman who pleases God will escape this person, but the sinner, they will ensnare. I think that speaks to every man, every woman in this room today.
Well, I hope it says something to you and me. The series continues tomorrow, and this message concludes tomorrow. Crosshope.org is our website, crosshope.org.
I want to talk about verse 29 as I wrap up. This only I have found: God made mankind upright, but men have gone in search of many schemes. Again, don't raise your hands, but some of you have somebody in your family who's always got a deal cooking, always got a scheme going on. There's always an angle they're working financially, an angle they're working in relationships with other people. And Solomon says, this is what I've observed, that God created men and women to be upright, to follow the Lord, but they go searching in schemes. Has there ever been a time in your life when you've been searching after schemes? And you know what that means. It means different things to different people, but it means something to everybody. It means different things to different people, but it means something to everybody. More important than your self-image is your God image. I'm going to tell a story. It's actually about a woman from Southwest Ohio. That's all I'm going to say about her. Her name is Vicky. She writes her story that she was born to a mother who was addicted to crack cocaine. She says she was told that when she was born addicted and went through all kinds of physical trauma as a newborn infant because mom was a crack cocaine addict. She was taken out of the home, and then she goes on to say that there were 8 babies this woman had, and all 8 were taken away from the mom because mom was addicted to crack cocaine. What a story. What a phenomenal story. So Vicky said, I grew up with a lot of resentment, a lot of anger toward my biological mother, understandably so. She said, I grew up with physical disabilities. I've got learning disabilities. I got problems with my life emotionally, all because I was born to a crack cocaine addict. But you know what Vicky said? She said, you know, the thing that's kept me going, the thing that's given me hope, is the love of an adoptive family. A family that adopted me into their family, and a father and mother, adoptive parents who loved me, who were examples to me of what it means to be a godly parent, an example of what it means to be a loving parent. And she said, that's been my salvation, is being raised in a family of people who love me. All kinds of scriptures flooded my mind when I read Vicky's story. You know, the book of Ephesians says that we have received a spirit of adoption as Christians. Paul would say that we have been adopted, what, into a club? No, we've been adopted into the family of God. And by this adoption through Christ's death on the cross and accepting everything he accomplished on the cross, Paul would say in Ephesians, you have the opportunity and the privilege to reference God as Abba, which doesn't mean a thing to most people, you or me, until you realize that Abba was Aramaic for the most intimate word that a child could use with a father. It means daddy. We have the right to call Abba Father because of what Christ did on the cross and accepting that we have been adopted into the family of God. What matters is not your self-image. Ultimately, what matters is your God image. And you may have heard this message today and say, well, man, that's a difficult passage to process. It is. Roland Murphy said it's the most difficult chapter out of the most difficult book of the Bible. But yet I think it spoke to me today and it speaks to you about stuff going on in your life. The most important thing I said today was the first verse, consider what God has done. I want you to leave here today considering what God is doing in your life right now. And to consider what God may be doing in this moment, in this hour, in this day, 2013, where God is working in your life right now, speaking to your spirit, to your heart, about not your self-image, but your God image, through Christ.
You have been listening to Cross Hope with Randy Snyder. For more information or to listen to or download a copy of today's message, go to crosshope.org. That web address again is www.crosshope.org. Be sure to tune in each weekday at this same time to Cross Hope with Randy Snyder. This program has been a production of Cross Hope Ministries.